Welcome to the Sleepcast. You'll slowly fall asleep during the course of this episode.
You're not, that's not a comment on the on you're not saying the episodes are boring. You're just
No,
like
no.
you're tired.
It's bedtime, yeah.
Hello there.
Hello.
Welcome back to Star Wars Total Rewatch. I'm Aaron.
I'm Daniel.
And I'm Cody.
What are we talking about today?
Well, what are we talking about? Legacy? Clone Wars Legacy? Another episode?
Yeah, there's this whole thing they tacked on at the end back in 2014. It's called the Clone Wars Legacy. So the Clone Wars Legacy is the banner title they put on this handful of unfinished episodes. When Disney bought out Lucasfilm, they were, halfway through production of season 6 of the Clone Wars. They had about that many episodes ready to go, and they ended it there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But they had a bunch of other episodes in the works. They'd been planning to do at least another full season, I believe. So they had episodes in all varying stages of completeness. Some were not anything beyond like a script or even just like an, story idea. And some were partly animated or like fragments of it were ready. And some of them they wanted to get out to the fans in some form. So we got similar in some ways to Shadows of the Empire. We got a multimedia project here.
Ooh. Of all the leftovers.
Exactly, yes. We've talked a few times about the chronological episode listing that StarWars.com has available.
Right.
Prior to Season 7 being released, these Clone Wars Legacy items were included on their list.
Oh, okay.
They included it on the official list because they count these as part of the canonical, you know, stories.
Right. Or at least they did until Season 7.
So that's the thing. It's not on the list anymore. I don't know what that means, whether they still count these or not. I feel like they still are valid, though. I don't think,
yeah.
Like we said, some of them don't really relate to anything, so why not? And the ones that do with Darth Maul and with Ventress, I don't think have been contradicted by anything else and feel like they're a natural continuation of their stories. So I would assume that it's still being included as part of whatever you want to call canon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I mean, everything's canon.
Everything's canon, right?
Yeah. In my heart, it's still on the list.
There you go. Me too. So anyway, so there were two full story arcs that were released as unfinished animations. There was a comic book featuring Darth Maul and a novel featuring Ventress. Hmm. So, you know, we finished the Clone Wars, but since some of these do wrap up story arcs that were started during the show, it just felt like it was worth briefly touching on them before we move on to bigger and better things. I think I'm the only one of us three here who actually went through all of this content. You guys watched the unfinished animated episodes.
Right. Watching the animations, these are very unfinished. I mean, it's watchable, but like...
Barely watchable.
Yeah. It's just like, sure, adapting it into a book or a comic is one thing. But like, I'm surprised that they let them release.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think it's nice that they let them do that, you know? It obviously, there was a lot of work put into it, and it was at least the most finished stuff as out of everything that they would have had in production at that time. But also, at the same time, it's like, they're not continuing this story, they're just kind of irrelevant to overall Clone Wars, like the overall series, you know? So then I guess it's like, then why not just put it out?
Yeah. So I feel like the other items are maybe more relevant. The ones that got released as full episodes aren't really connected to ongoing story arcs so much.
Well, and if it had been some like critical story, then releasing it that way would have just been a real shame.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I'm guessing with the animated ones, it's just that they had them, they were the closest to being ready, and they said, we just ought to do something with this.
Yeah.
It's fun. I don't know. It's a fun look behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Because they said this is what they would use to show to George himself.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody just slides across the floor.
Yeah.
Mouths don't move when they talk.
But, yeah, no, I was actually kind of impressed with how much they actually put into it for what it is. Sure. There's still like a decent amount of movements and like the fight scenes are pretty well done still to have them actually.
It's just like all the major movements and blocking and stuff and camera angles, you know.
But yeah, you can imagine this is what they were all watching on their computers in their offices. And like you said, sharing with George, getting his thoughts. And then they'd say, okay, good to go. Now we'll actually polish it up and make it watchable.
Oh, yeah. It's always good to have that like rough foundation to build off of.
The first one I guess we could mention is the Bad Batch story arc was released as, again, a set of unfinished animated episodes. The animation is unfinished. Everything else is there. Mm-hmm. The voice acting, the sound effects, even the music and everything. So if you don't look too close at the screen, you can pretend you're watching like a real episode, right?
Right,
but, like,
right.
but otherwise, it's a little grating, maybe. But the Bad Batch episodes, I don't know that we really need to go into them too much right now because they did finally finish them as part of season 7. So if you've watched season 7, you've already seen those 4 episodes.
Right. Is it just the same episodes, just finished?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like practically the same. Oh. It sounds like I haven't compared them back to back.
Right.
But I understand there's like maybe a couple minor things and maybe 1 or 2 scenes that they changed just to fit better with whatever they're doing.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Because it's like once you put out that unfinished version, and it's like, well, what's the draw to watch the finished version, except that it's, I don't know, just for completion's sake.
Yeah.
And maybe they knew they wanted to do a spinoff series and have like a actually complete version.
I think that's the reason.
Set it all up.
Yeah. And I don't think that a lot of people have seen or read or anything this Clone Wars legacy.
Yeah, I suppose.
But the second one is called Crystal Crisis on Utapau. So the plot is Anakin and Obi-Wan go to Utapau in search of
a crystal.
Did they go looking for a crystal? They went looking for something that the Separatists were up to.
A Jedi died.
Yeah. I don't remember what the name of the Jedi was.
And then it turns out there's some like weapons smuggling and
some
other species on Utapau I've never seen before. Anyway, then I got kind of lost and there's some giant green crystal they're trying to get.
Well, it's a giant kyber crystal.
Is it? Okay.
The mega crystal.
Yes, it is. They say, we've never seen one this big before. What's going on here? We can't let it fall into Separatist hands. Who knows what they could do with it.
Okay.
They find out it can like absorb energy and shoot it back out again. So fire a bunch of lasers into it till it explodes. It's too powerful for anyone to have.
Well, that's what we learned, that Ilum was turned into Star Killer Base.
Oh, that's
because
right.
They made a giant laser by refracting the power of the sun in the crystal core.
It's implied that something like this was involved in the Death Star plans.
Yeah.
They're not able to use this particular crystal, but they say clearly it was intended for some kind of a weapon, and I'm sure whoever was after it won't stop here. They'll find another one. And they say, can that be a real thing? We've never seen one that big. And Yoda says, there's ancient stories about crystals like this being used to power super weapons way back in, you know.
And Yoda said, size matters not.
Yes, exactly. Well, I thought of like, didn't the Old Republic, Knights of the Old Republic, have some giant super weapons?
They did have that, the Star Forge used the power of the sun.
There you go. Something along those lines. Well, anyway. That's Crystal Crisis on Utapau. It's not the most compelling story.
No.
I guess it was kind of cool to see Utapau.
Yeah.
A little more story behind that, besides it's a random planet that Dulcet and Grievous is at. Learn a little bit about them. Apparently there's several different species.
Yeah, yeah.
Planet, including one that's very primitive.
Yeah, always nice to get a culture fleshed out a little bit more.
But yeah, this would have been before Revenge of the Sith, so...
Mm-hmm.
It would be establishing just the Republic involvement on Utapau.
You're talking about the thing with mentioning Ahsoka.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Anakin says something about Ahsoka, and they're like, yeah, she's gone.
Yeah, the scene Anakin is instinctively says, okay, I'll contact Ahsoka and have her, oh, wait, oh, she's gone.
Oh, sad. How sad.
I appreciated her at least getting a mention, because I don't think she even got that much in season six. It's just, you know, she's in the back of their minds somewhere.
Well, she eventually gets her own show.
She does. There you go. We'll be talking about that eventually. Okay, moving on. Darth Maul, Son of Dathomir.
Oh.
This was released as a four-part comic book series, and I think eventually published all together in one volume somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And we've mentioned this once or twice, because the last time we saw Darth Maul in the series, he was captured by Sidious, and we said, how did he get from there to being back on top in charge of the crime organizations in Solo, the movie?
Yeah. How did he do it?
Well, that was at the end of the Mandalore stories, right? He killed Duchess Satine, and he took over all the crime organizations and took over Mandalore, and he thought he was up on top and was going to go after Sidious next. But of course, you can't go up against Sidious. He just showed up and took him out right away.
Killed Savage.
No!
Yeah, exactly. So in this comic book arc, it begins with Darth Maul imprisoned in a tower, and he is rescued by his Death Watch Mandalorian team. Mm. They are still loyal to him,
yeah,
for whatever reason.
Okay.
They have to be.
Well, yeah, I guess. Do they have to be because of, like...
He's still the rightful ruler of Mandalore.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that part.
Best of them in combat.
Until somebody else takes him down in... official combat, takes the Darksaber.
Well, I mean, technically Sidious did, but he didn't take up the Darksaber. He could have, maybe.
There, he missed opportunity there.
He could have been the ruler of Mandalore.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyhow, so they do. They break into the tower, and I think Sidious was maybe not present, which is maybe why they were able to do it. I forget who, Grievous or somebody was there watching him. Yeah, so they break in and break him out of prison. And then it turns out Sidious didn't mind him getting freed because he was still watching him, and he thought they were going to use Maul as bait to try and get Mother Talzin to reveal herself.
Oh.
So she shows up again as a big part of this story as well.
And it worked?
She shows up, yeah. I mean, we've seen her die like three times already, right?
I know. Yeah. Jar Jar blew her up.
Yeah. This is all right. Jar Jar killed her. But here she is again, and I guess, spoiler alert, she seems to be killed more definitively at the end of this one.
God.
By Sidious.
By Sidious. So it was Sidious thought it would be bait to get her out of hiding.
Yeah, yeah. He wanted to use Darth Maul as bait to get Mother Talzin to come out of whatever ethereal plane she's been hiding in.
That is so weird.
Yeah, it's kind of unexpected places for the story to go.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it kind of makes sense in a way. He ends up acting like he sees if anybody's a threat to his power, it's her much more than Darth Maul.
Uh-huh.
There's some interesting stuff going on there.
Okay.
That's the whole arc? That's the whole thing?
That's essentially the whole thing. I mean, very briefly summarized. I mean, it's a lot of...
four comics.
Well, I mean, there's more stages, you know? Like, they take turns teaming up with different people and then teaming up with the other side, you know, and break and betraying them, and as you'd expect, right?
Naturally.
Maul tries to get Dooku to join him at one point. He says, you know what? The two of us together are stronger than Sidious, and since you... definitely want to overthrow him, and I do too. Why not just...
Yeah.
I don't know why he doesn't go for it.
Yeah,
he doesn't go for it. I feel like he would have if he'd really felt like things were turning that way, though. But I think he kind of just goes along with him until Sidious shows up, and he's like, yeah, no, you're not going to be able to beat him. But at one point, he has Grievous and Dooku both captured, and... as always, doesn't kill them. Nobody kills anybody, even though they keep claiming they want to. Okay. I think it's worth checking out. It's not that long, and it explains how Darth Maul gets away, and you get some cool Sith fights. So there you go.
Probably some cool art.
Yeah, it is some cool art. And, you know, I don't know if it 100% bridges the gap between where we see him again later.
Because
it doesn't feel like he's still in charge of the crime organizations by the end of it. I think the Mandalorians were still loyal to him, so maybe there's enough of that he was able to rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
You can fill in those blanks yourself. Oh, also, fun fact, apparently Mother Talzin is Maul's actual mother.
What?
That's what we get revealed to us in this story.
Okay. How?
How and why? I don't know. It's a good question. And that's why she's so invested in helping him.
All right. Well,
and she was also Savage's mother, wasn't they brothers?
Well, okay, so it raises some questions as to, like, kind of weird, like, is she kind of actually everybody's mother?
Right. Well, how do they procreate? Is this something we need to
understand? These are the real questions we need answered.
Yes.
Are they born out of the mud, like Uruk-hai?
Oh. Well, thankfully it didn't go into a whole lot of detail on all of that. Last one is called Dark Disciple, and that's a novel written by Christy Golden, but based on a bunch of unproduced scripts.
Yeah, that sounded cool.
Yeah, I think of all of them, this is the one I would have liked to have seen made into episodes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it is just about Ventress's arc as a character and her development.
Yeah.
And so in some ways, I wish it would have been made just so that more people would get to experience this part of the story.
Right.
Because it kind of just, she just disappears.
Right.
Yeah. She was a good character and then just
poof,
didn't really resolve.
Right. Where this would have been like the completion of her story. And I think it's really interesting. Anybody out there listening wants to take the time, I'd say the book is definitely worth reading and probably the most worthwhile of all the legacy items here.
So stop listening now if you plan on reading.
I know. Well, yeah, I guess I'll say spoiler alert because I feel like this is worth spending time on if you want to go ahead and read it. But if you keep listening, I'm just going to tell you what happens in it. So be warned.
I'm prepared to be spoiled.
Indeed. Hit me.
So the Jedi Council want Dooku dead. They decide, we've tried to capture him. We've tried to stop him. It's never worked. We need to just have somebody go and assassinate him.
Oh.
And there's some debate about, should we be doing this as Jedi? Probably not. But what choice do we have?
Right.
And they think Ventress is the one who came the closest to accomplishing this task in the past.
Yeah, they did.
And so they say we need to, you know, team up with her. So they send Quinlan Vos to team up with her. They try to kill Count Dooku. And along the way, she starts teaching him the ways of the dark side because she says that's the only way you'll be able to defeat Dooku.
Oh, wow.
And
oh, no.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So he starts to get into that. And also along the way, the two of them fall in love.
Of course.
And have a whole thing, a whole relationship.
Have a
there.
Babies?
No, wow. Not that I am aware of, no. But wouldn't that be something?
It's interesting that the Jedi were the ones that initiated that, because I definitely feel like a totally different side to Ventress was seen in those episodes where she was helping Ahsoka like escape and
mm-hmm.
uncover like that plot against her.
Yeah.
So I like just that alone, I feel like, you know, even though Ahsoka left the order at the end of that, it's like, you're probably like, actually might be good to try to track down Ventress. Even, you know, even just to try to bring her back to the Jedi, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
You wonder how often they would try to seek out, you know, some of their friends who fell away, you know, at different times.
Yeah, well, it's one thing that's really interesting is to see everybody's reactions to her, because she does at a couple of points come to the Jedi Temple to talk
Whoa.
To them. And, yeah.
That's crazy.
Early on, before I think that even happens, she does make contact with Obi-Wan Kenobi just mm-hmm. to say he's maybe the one who would be most likely to listen to what I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And he is. And so it's very interesting to see Obi-Wan really is sticking up for her to mm-hmm. the rest of the council and saying, no, I really do believe she's changed and we can trust her now. And Anakin's a little skeptical. Mace Windu is not giving her a chance. He doesn't believe that she is capable of changing, or that anybody who's, I think, a Sith is capable of changing. He's just very stuck on that, which is interesting, but I feel like I can see Mace Windu being that way too.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Mace Windu, I can definitely see him seeing the worst in people.
Yeah.
It's a little hard to define what part of the Force she's on, right? Where on that spectrum she is, because as a Night Sister, they're still all about the dark side, but it's like not quite as dark as the Sith? Does that seem right?
Yeah, I feel like they don't follow the like Sith principles.
Yeah, it's an alternative force.
Alternative dark side.
That's what it seems to be. And that's what she was trying to teach Quinlan Vos.
Mm. Mm.
She's not chaining him the way the Sith did. She specifically brings him actually to Dathomir to try to do as much as she knows of the way the Night Sisters were trained.
Mm.
She says that they had found a way to balance the dark side, not to get too deep into it. Right. They said, if you get too deep into the dark side, of course it consumes you, and they are aware of that.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
They figure out a way to keep on the edge of it in some way.
Interesting.
And just use it. Yeah, it doesn't seem like other parts of Star Wars would consider that to be possible. The Jedi sure don't seem to think that's possible.
Right.
And that's what she's trying to teach Vos to do. It's also the way she talks about what she's teaching him makes me feel like she's trying to preserve what's left of her culture.
Sure.
Because there aren't any more Night Sisters left. And she also says that she doesn't know all of what they knew. And she regrets that. She says she shows him where those pods were that they would bury the dead sisters in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I don't know how to do this. This isn't something I learned while I was with them.
It's kind of sad.
It is. It is. And I mean, there's not really anyone left to do that to either. So it's the whole way of life is kind of gone with her. She says that a lot of what she knows of the Night Sister training was actually not something that she even went through, but was from conversations with other sisters. She mentions Karis a few times. Do you remember Karis?
Yep.
It was like the other one named Night Sister.
Mm.
It crossed my mind that she's the last Night Sister, like Luke is the last Jedi.
Oh.
Wow. There is this character in the Jedi Fallen Order game.
Yeah.
Okay, that's right. And that takes place after this, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, where did she come from?
She was just on Dathomir.
Just hiding.
Okay.
I think there probably were just some other ones.
Yeah, I mean, Dathomir's a whole giant...
It's a whole planet.
Yeah. Planet, so it'd be tough to find someone, especially if they're in hiding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, why not? But yeah, okay, so maybe there is hope for the Night Sisters to come back in some way.
Oh, yes, we can only hope. What a shame to lose that creepy culture.
Right, I know, yeah, hope, or whatever you want to call it. I guess you could say the same again for The Last Jedi, because we keep finding more and more Jedi who survived somehow.
I know.
You guys remember Quinlan Vos from The Clone Wars?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a real rebel. It's great.
I need to look him up again. Was he the one that helped catch Jango? Or no, not Jango Fett.
Cad Bane.
Cad Bane, yeah, it was him.
Yeah, Cad Bane and Zero the Hutt, right? They were mm-hmm. trying to go after him.
Yeah, he's just this real outlier of a Jedi in the deep space kind of planets, outer rim planets.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like he's often off on undercover missions of one kind or another out in, like you said, the far reaches of space, right?
Mm-hmm.
He seems like he's as far outside of the Jedi as you can get, but still being in the Jedi Order officially.
Mm-hmm.
I think they know that he's just better suited for being out on his own, having adventures.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why they pick him for the mission of going to team up with Asajj Ventress and kill Dooku.
In my mind, it's like if he ever returned to the Jedi Temple, everyone is just like, he like smells really bad.
Probably
he's
does.
Some sort of like, nah, man, you just gotta bathe with this root. It's like the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So when they're on Dathomir, there's a very weird section where part of the training, apparently, that every Night Sister underwent was to dive into this enormously deep pool in this cavern where this crazy monster lives called what? The Sleeper.
Oh.
That's like the Mandalorians do.
Yeah, actually, now that you mention that. Yeah. I guess I didn't specifically bring that to mind, but it does now. But I did think about how it's another one of these examples that we've seen many times in Star Wars now of some weird creature who's kind of like the essence of a planet.
Right.
You know, embodied in something. And this is another one of those. So okay. There's a creature on Dathomir that's a dark side creature. It's a dark side planet, but not like an evil creature, again, I guess, like the Night Sisters, which is a little hard to understand. Mm-hmm. And it has tentacles and it's crazy colors. And I don't really know. The description they use made me think of like a Cthulhu type of thing, right?
Oh. Right.
Like, it's hard to even describe what it is. It's just such a weird thing.
Right? Yeah.
But he's supposed to dive down there and like get one of his tentacles and stuff. And there's a whole thing with that. And anyway, they try to kill Count Dooku at some party that they go to, and they meet him out on the balcony at night and take him on to duel him.
Did Quinlan Vos have to clean up to blend in at a party?
He did, yes. They had to go. They actually have to go and get outfits, and he's wearing like some suit, and he's like, "Huh, okay, I guess this works. Okay, I've never done this before. Not too bad. Not too shabby." But yeah, they are not able to kill him because Grievous is also there, it turns out.
No.
And then they call a bunch of droids.
No.
Yeah, of course, right? So Quinlan is captured, and Ventress then is trying to rescue him later on. And Vos starts to actually fall to the dark side because she'd been giving him a big push in that direction already, but was intending to try to keep him on the edge, right? And Dooku realizes that, and he's like, oh, obviously, I'm just going to pull you all the way in. So he does his best to pull him into the dark side. And so then there proceeds to be a lot of back and forth when they do rescue him. But wait, is he really still working for Dooku secretly? Mm-hmm. Is he still Darkseid or is he not? And actually, I thought I was working for Dooku, but really, I love you too much. And I'm really, I'm really gonna, you brought me back to myself, but I'm still got some Darkseid in me, but I'm not the Sith that you thought I was, that sort of thing. I would say it maybe has a few too many of those, but wait, he's really on this side. Oh, but wait, he's really on this side. And in the end, the Jedi go after Quinlan, trying to capture him because they think he really is working for Dooku. And it turns out he was just using Dooku to try to figure out who Sidious was, but they didn't know that.
No.
And big battles ensue, and Quinlan survives, but Ventress sadly does not.
No.
She is killed during some of that. And Quinlan brings her back to Dathomir and buries her with her sisters.
Oh.
But, like you were saying, surprising that the Jedi were the ones instigating this whole thing in the first place, right? And they do keep bringing that up throughout the book, that this is not a good path for the Jedi to be on, you know, and Vos is working with the dark side in order to do it. They keep justifying more and more things for the greater good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so Ventress doesn't live to the end, you know, of the story, but it feels like a real complete arc for her, that she is, at the end of this, she has fully been redeemed as she's been gradually working toward that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the Clone Wars series, we've seen that start to happen. And then this book, you really start to see her opening up more to Quinlan and really starting to care about somebody again, letting different parts of herself, you know, open to good things again and beautiful things again.
Mm-hmm.
Her hair is starting to grow out a little bit, they say.
Huh. Oh.
So I don't know if that is correspondent to how much good there is in her, the more hair she has. And so by the end of the book, she not only redeemed herself, but they make a point of saying that she brought Quinlan Vos back from the brink. He says she brought me back to the light again.
Mm-hmm.
And even the whole Jedi Council talks about, in one of their meetings at the end, says, actually, we've been making a lot of really poor decisions lately and getting ourselves into too much into the darkness. And maybe what she did, kind of sacrificing herself in a way, brought us as a Jedi Council back from the direction we were headed to. Mm. Even Mace Windu grudgingly admits, yeah, maybe she wasn't so bad after all or something.
Too bad we had to kill her to realize we were being so dumb.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a little melodramatic, maybe. I don't feel that there was any necessity in the story for any of them to get killed.
I knew that she died in that book. And so, yeah, just to have a rounded out character arc in the direction that it seemed like it was heading after the Clone Wars episodes. But she was always a tragic character, so I wasn't surprised that it ended like in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was sad. It's a tragic ending in a way. It's a little like the Romeo and Juliet thing where it's like, oh, they're so close to just going away together and having a nice life, but not quite.
Right.
Thanks for joining me, you guys. For me,
that
just
was great.
Yeah, it was good.
So edit this together into something.
Yeah.
Good luck.
For our Patreon supporters, you can listen to the unedited version.
Oh, dear.
Yes. Oh, dear. So there you have it. The real end of the Clone Wars until season 7, which is the real end of the Clone Wars. Next time, for real, we'll be getting on to Rebels. So I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah. Have a good night, everybody, if you're not already sleeping.
We'll see you there. Good night, everyone.
Bye.